This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Justin Cohen, and coming up on this special program. Two Emiratis and a Bahraini walk into a yeshiva. It's no joke. We hear firsthand from a group of young activists, creatives, students, and business figures from the Gulf, who have just returned from their first visit to Israel following an invitation from NGO Israel Is. The group explored commonalities with their Israeli hosts and the durability of the Abraham Accords during 7 days traversing the country, from a yeshiva in Modi'in Elit to an Ethiopian Heritage Center in Tel Aviv, from Yad Vashem in Jerusalem to meeting residents of Yerucham on the country's periphery. Jewish News followed every step as part of a film by award-winning director Malcolm Green to be released later this year. But first, it's time to introduce our panel. Emtiaz Radman, a British-born teacher living and working in the UAE for the last 6 years. Dubai-based engineer and peace activist Saud Saga. And Yusuf Mohammed, who is currently studying tourism in Bahrain and hopes one day to use travel to bridge the gaps between Bahrain and Israel. Yusuf, if we can start with you on a subject I know is dear to every Israeli's heart, food. You had a chance to sample Ashkenazi food, Sephardi food, Yemenite food, and Ethiopian food. I even got you at one point to do a taste test, thinking you might become Jewish News' latest resident chef. What particularly made an impression on you? What are you going to be cooking in Bahrain now?
So, you know, there were some amazing dishes, but and Israel is known for its diversity and you know, food and different cultures is combined and different people cook different things. And you probably remember that we went to an Ethiopian center with Ashagar, and you forgot to mention that, but that was maybe my favorite place because, you know, we have a lot of Ethiopian people working in Bahrain. And, you know, I've seen the dishes that she presented and I was like, wow, you know, that's really nice. Everything is very semi-liquid and it looks easy to do. I've never tried to do it, but, you know, I might try to do it very soon. But that is one thing that stayed with me as in terms of food. And there was another thing that shocked me was when we went to the library and when we ate and there was this sweet fish. I forgot what it was called. Well, it's called sweet.
The gefilte fish, sorry.
The gefilte fish, yes. That was something. I've never tasted sweet fish before. It's like you're telling me or you're telling someone who hates pineapple on apple, pineapple on pizza, do you want pineapple on pizza? It's obviously going to be no. So when you tell me sweet with fish, I was going to say no. But until I tried it, that was something. That was an experience.
You told me, Yusuf, that you were going to be doing some research and online and starting to bring these dishes to Bahrain. Have you started that yet?
In fact, I've not, you know, as we came back from Sunday, the only thing that really interested me that I'm going to start first with is the challah bread. And I'm going to try to do that for this Friday. I'm going to try to see how, you know, the bread is really made. If I can get the oven properly, maintain at the right temperature and get it baked properly. Hope I can do that.
Emtiaz, can you tell us a bit about why you decided to make this journey in the first place? I know that you had an opportunity to meet some of the Israelis from Israel Is in Dubai a couple of months ago. And as a result of that, you'd actually received a huge amount of abuse online. So why did you decide it was important to go ahead with this journey?
First of all, my dream was always to travel to the Middle East and to be part of the Eastern culture because I was born and raised in the West. I always felt there was something missing from my culture, so to speak. So I did attend the first delegation 2 months ago in Dubai and I really enjoyed it. And I just realized how similar we were in terms of language, in terms of our culture, in terms of our religion. So why not, you know, why not get together and bring people together? Also, for me, I come from a Yemenite background and it's rumored that my ancestors were Yemenite Jews. So I thought it would be a perfect opportunity to explore that area and get closer to like the Yemenite community and just bring people together in general.
Did you receive, were people very puzzled as to why you wanted to make this journey back home?
Not really, no. I mean, a lot of the people that I spoke to in the delegation, they were like, we can understand where you're coming from, which kept me thinking, you know, maybe I'm missing something. I did get a lot of abuse, especially when I checked out of Tel Aviv airport on the way, and I put Tel Aviv airport, and then I got abuse saying it's called Palestine, blah, blah, blah. So then I had to comment on my Instagram, say the airport that I traveled from was called Tel Aviv airport. It's not Palestine. You're always going to upset people. There's always going to be people out there that disagree with you. But as long as I know that I'm doing it from a good place in my heart, and I'm doing it to bring people together rather than make people work against each other, then, you know, let them be. I mean, it's not a reflection on me. The way I've been raised is to accept all and to just be kind to people. And if they've been raised in a different way, then lead them to it.
And so what would you say is what was the biggest surprise about your trip? What element of it shocked you the most, in a good way, perhaps?
Actually, when I went there, I wasn't expecting the people to be so friendly. I mean, I knew that they are friendly. I knew that they are Middle Eastern, but the general idea that they are more Westerns. But when I actually arrived there and I actually saw them and talked to them and I would say dine with them, they were pretty Middle Eastern. And that was one of the most, I wouldn't say shocking, but I would say surprising. Mm. One of the surprising elements that I actually found there, and they are so peaceful, and they really want to show the world that they are a peaceful people, not what the media is showing.
And I know that you had the opportunity with a few of the other members of the group to go to the Temple Mount. Can you describe that experience to us?
Well, the Temple Mount, I would say it's Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa. I would say it's one of the best experiences that I had there. So at the morning, I went to Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa, Haram Sharif. And Al-Haram Sharif, Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa, Temple Mount, it have 10 gates and 9 of them are for Muslims. 9 of the gates are for Muslims. And as far as I've been told, but the media does not show that. There is only one gate, which is actually for the Jewish community. The experience was really amazing going there. I actually went there and I actually prayed there. It wasn't what it shows in the media, that the police is attacking the mosque or the police is going into the mosque. The police was there to actually have some, I would say some crowd control. So to control the crowd and to keep the peace there, like from both, I would say, extreme groups. So either if there were, I would say, Jewish extreme group that would try to attack the mosque, or there will be, I would say, Palestinian extremist group who would actually try to get into the mosque. So the police was there actually to maintain the peace. And this is what's not the media showing.
And when since you've returned to the UAE, what have people been saying to you? What have you been telling them about your trip?
So my family and friends were very supporting. Most of them actually, they want to come and they want to explore the culture. I have been corrected some misconceptions, because when people usually say Israelis, they directly think that all of them are Jewish, but that is not correct. There is Arabs, there is Christians, there is Druze. So when we say Israelis, we mean the country. So just like we're saying United Arab Emirates or Bahrain or Saudi Arabia, Israel is a country, it's a state. And the people there are coming from many different backgrounds. So I was correcting, I would say, the misconception that was there. And people actually, they were surprised and they were actually happy to learn and to know more about the Israeli people.
And MTS, I know that when you were out in Israel, you were already receiving messages, positive messages from friends, and not just within the UAE, but I think in the UK and elsewhere, that kind of saw your pictures and were interested in learning more. Do you think as a result of your coverage, many other people will want to visit Israel? Have they expressed that interest to you?
After posting a few of the pictures of the trip, I've been getting positive feedback from friends, family that want to visit. Friends from all over the world, to be honest. Ones that thought that Israel was negative because of the media. Even today, I spent a couple of days with a family one guy who's head of director of Beit Shemesh, the youth department, because I'm a teacher, I'm interested in working with youth. And he traveled from Israel to build connections with us here in UAE. Basically, he's the director of Beit Shemesh, the youth department, and the deputy chairman of the National Association of Youth Managers in Israel. And he's keen on bringing the two countries together. So since I've been back, I've just been busy like connecting with people and mapping out our next steps and to see how we can, you know, bring us united with each other. I think now tourism would definitely boom. I mean, I've just been around. I live in Abu Dhabi and I've spent a couple of days in Dubai, and the amount of Hebrew speaking people, I've never noticed it so much. I mean, there's more and more tourists now, and I think the same will happen with Israel. More and more tourists from the Gulf will be wanting to visit and explore and learn and see for themselves.
I think that that was actually one of the most striking things for me about the trip. MTS, when we were in a taxi at one point, your Hebrew was better than mine, and you were able to understand the driver better than me. And at the same time, there were, obviously Israeli Arabs that we met, and the conversations that you and the rest of the group were able to have with them that I wasn't kind of part of. So I think that this diversity within the country was quite striking for everyone, and, you know, really, really showed the different sides of Israel.
Definitely. The language, there's a lot of similarities in the language, Arabic and Hebrew. So even if I didn't understand the words, I could kind of guess what the sentences were or what they were talking about. I mean, and the diversity in terms of like people, the actual cities in Israel, from city to city, parts of it reminded me of the UK. Other parts of it reminded me of Oman or Yemen. I mean, it's very diverse. It's amazing. It's like many holidays in one, if I was to say many holidays in one. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing experience, and I'm definitely planning my next trip. So I'm going pretty soon, maybe in the next couple of months.
Fantastic. And Yusuf, I know that you're also, I think, planning your next visit, and I think you're interested in getting involved more on the tourism side in terms of your work to promote tourism between Bahrain and Israel. What was it about the country, perhaps, that you didn't expect that actually turned out to be the case? Obviously, this was your first trip as well.
As Imtiaz and Saud said, number one thing is the people. You know, I honestly did not expect them to be as friendly as Saud said. And what I thought was like, okay, I need to like wear a mask. I need to cover myself like before I go there. I shouldn't say that I'm from Bahrain, etc. And that's what I was thinking. Because what we see is that everyone's just chanting death to Arabs, death to Arabs. I'm like, I don't want to die going there. And that was the first thing on my mind. But then when I went there, from the airport to the security to everything, they were so welcoming. And I was shocked. I was like, wait, what's going on? Do you know that I'm Bahraini? You know, it should be the complete opposite. And I even went to a restaurant, and then, you know, a guy called Max, who I'm still good friends with, and we're planning our trips together that we're going to go to different places around the world as, you know, as an Israeli and Bahraini. So I just saw that how friendly people can be, how hospitable they are. That's number one. Number two was just the sightseeing. It's such a open place. It's a place of freedom. You can do what you want, and people aren't really gonna look at you in a specific way. Like, why are you doing that? What are you doing? Etc. They just let people live. They let people be, and but they don't go back of you about everything. And in Bahrain, we have a similar thing, but a lot of people all around the world don't really have that level of freedom as, you know, our countries do.
You also, you know, you said you were worried about how people might react. Most of the time, I'd say, you and Saud and other people in the group were going around in traditional dress. Did you at any point feel nervous about that? Did you ever feel comfortable or that wasn't a good idea?
Typically, when I walk around with the traditional dress in Bahrain, you know, I'm as equal as any other person walking in the streets. But when I was in Israel, I felt like I was, you know, maybe like Michael Jackson coming back to life and walking the streets. This is how I felt. You know, everyone is just looking at you. Everyone is parking their cars on a sideway in the middle of the road, blocking the streets. Cops literally, you know, using their loudspeaker to move people, to move the road. You know, I was shocked that, you know, people typically don't see this. And I was happy. I was happy to see people that they were happy. And I was also happy to see that I was able to wear my traditional dress Like when we went to the different areas, people were wearing their dresses, like the Orthodox, you know, the dress that they wear and the thobe. And we sit and we talk and I'm like, wow, you know, who would have imagined that we both can wear what we want and, you know, live in each other's land, like enjoy each other's lands, I would say.
Yeah, I think you had a very interesting conversation at one point at the Kotel, the Western Wall, on Friday afternoon with a large group of young Haredi people, ultra-Orthodox people, saying that, you know, you were talking about your dress, they were saying that this is their traditional dress. It was a really nice moment and one that, you know, people don't see often enough. But at the same time, there were some moments during the trip where, you know, the tensions were on show. I'm thinking particularly of our visit to Nazareth, and in the market, the group was shouted at by two or three, and it wasn't more than that, two or three people that were calling you traitors and saying go back to Tel Aviv, and having a go at the Egyptian leader and other things. First of all, how did that make you feel? So maybe you could answer that. And is it something that you were expecting in an area like Nazareth?
All right. So basically, I'm going to talk about my experience in Tel Aviv first. Actually, I'm going to talk my experience wearing the whole traditional dress.
Yeah.
The idea of wearing it like in Tel Aviv in hotel, it was pretty relaxing. So we are in the hotel the first time in Israel. Like, I won't say the first time because I've never saw anyone. I've never saw pictures of, I would say, people from the UAE wearing an actual, say, traditional dress in Israel. So in Tel Aviv, it was pretty relaxing. It was nice. And then I got some, I would say, confident to actually wear it outside. So we actually wore it outside and we went to the street of Tel Aviv, and the group and everyone that we saw on the street, they had a really positive effect, I would say. So everyone was happy to see us wearing it. And then going to Nazareth, to me at least, at the back of my mind, it would have been just like Tel Aviv until we met, I would say, a couple of individuals that they only represent themselves and they represent their own ideas. And they start, say some negative words toward us. To me, after receiving all that positive experience that I actually had in Tel Aviv and from the group, so to me, their words, I would say, meant nothing to me. I mean, I'm just going to say that it's a little bit sad that there are some people who actually still adopt those kind of ideas. But to me personally, it meant nothing because everyone was supportive. The Israelis were supportive. So they were very supportive and they did most of the talking part, which shows that they really see that this idea does not represent them. It does not represent who they are. They are really looking for peace. That actually really made me, I would say, happy. I wouldn't say it scarred me a bit, but then going to Jerusalem, so from Tel Aviv to Nazareth to Jerusalem, I was a bit skeptical about it, like going to Jerusalem and actually going down, like I would say, like sitting the first few steps in a traditional dress, Kandura. The people there were so happy and they were, I would say, celebrating us. And this is what gave me, I would say, the most boost in the whole experience. So this is why I'm telling you I love Jerusalem.
So we did speak we spoke after the visit to the yeshiva and the opportunity for you to sit down and to speak to some of the students. 800 students, you walked into that room with your traditional dress. Describe that feeling, because we were seeking to find Abraham, and if he wasn't in that room, then I don't know where he is.
Well, the experience was, I'm gonna put it as magnificent, seeing all those students and scholars with different ages just coming there and sitting there and discussing, I would say, religious matters. And it was it was a really amazing experience, like magnificent. Like, I can't even like express it. And being there, I was also grateful for something. So as a Muslim, when I travel, just like as Jewish people, they would want, or they would like their food to be kosher. So when I went there to Israel, like the food wasn't an issue, but as far as I know, kosher means halal. So if something is kosher, it's halal. But I didn't know how deep was it. And then I had a conversation with some of the, I would say, two students who were actually talking so deep about what's called like the knife. It has to be sharp. It has like all the small and minor details. And that gave me a sense of, I would say, gratitude to them, because of them, because of their work, I'm having the best kosher halal food that is there. It's only result of them. So I was so happy, like, to understand all those small, small details and all the work that was actually put in there. So I thank them for actually making my trip like easier, at least on the food side, I would say so. Yeah.
And MTS, I think one of the most powerful moments for me during the trip was, I think we were, I'm not sure which of the many engagements, we were doing 16 hours or 17 hours on the road every single day. Not I'm looking for our listeners to feel too sorry for me, but you said to me that growing up in Birmingham, not far away from a synagogue, you never knowingly had a lengthy conversation or an in-depth conversation with a member of the Jewish community. And suddenly in Israel, you did have that opportunity. So I'm just wondering, do you think these accords could actually help kind of export interfaith relations, not just within the Middle East, but perhaps beyond that as well?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to speak a bit about appearance first, because I wanted to add to what Saud and Yusuf had mentioned. Obviously, you won't know because it's a podcast, but I cover my hair. And I can honestly say, traveling to Israel and traveling around Israel, I didn't feel unsafe at any time. I felt right at home. For me, because I was born in the West and then I moved to the East, it was a good balance for me. I didn't feel threatened or harmed at any time while I was out on the streets. And sometimes we stayed out till late. We went to smoke shisha or explore or visit places. I did not feel scared or harmed, even though before I went and I spoke to friends and family, they were like, be careful. And I was like, why is there to be careful? Because I didn't even think twice. I thought, oh, great opportunity. I'll get to see things firsthand for myself. I won't have to rely on the news to tell me what's going on, because I can see for myself. And it's complete opposite. I can honestly tell you it's a complete opposite. Now, going back to your question about, is it interrelational?
Interfaith relations, yeah. Kind
of. Interfaith relations. I think now that we've got this opportunity and our leaders in the Middle East, in UAE, have opened this door, I think people are intrigued. Like, I can speak today, when I was with the Jewish family, you can clearly see I've got a hijab on and the guy's got a kippah on. And we were walking together and you can see people looking over, like, they were like, oh, that's a first, or like they wanted to know more. Like you mentioned, growing up in Birmingham, we did have a synagogue in our area, but not once did I have a chance to visit. I remember it being vandalized at one stage. I hardly knew anything about the Jewish community. I don't know if they were reserved or close-knit. I don't blame them because of what's been going on. I didn't grow up knowing them. Like, I knew loads of Christians, I knew loads of Muslims, but I didn't really know any Jewish people. Or maybe I did, but I didn't know that they were Jewish. But I think now with the Abrahamic peace agreement, people are more open to knowing more about the other side, to explore the other side, to learn the language, learn the culture, visit the country. So I think it's a positive step, definitely.
Do you feel that in some way, now that you know the possibilities, do you feel that you maybe missed out a bit being in Birmingham and not having those interactions back in the day?
Not at all, to be fair, because like even when I visited, when the Israelis visited Dubai, first of all, it was like we were family separated. We got on instantly. And like now when I went to visit Israel, I didn't feel like I missed out at all. We just got on so well. And it's like family. We're like family now. We talk about many topics. We hang out together. We Zoom each other regularly. We message each other. We've got WhatsApp groups where we keep in touch. So it's just like family. I don't feel like I've missed out at all. And hopefully this will continue. And it will grow as well.
Absolutely. And one of the other places we all visited was Yad Vashem, the National Holocaust Memorial in Jerusalem. I'm just wondering, maybe we start with you, Yusuf. Growing up in Bahrain before the Abraham Accords and so on, were you very much aware of the Holocaust? Did you learn about the Holocaust? Is it part of studies automatically? And how much did you learn from that particular visit last week?
So prior to the Abraham Accord, we might have had classes. So I was in a private school. So I'm not sure how it is in a public school, but we did have classes on, you know, the history, World War II, what has happened and what Hitler has done and all of that. So we have learned about it, not a lot about the Holocaust in specific. But, you know, when I went to the Holocaust, to Yad Vashem, I cried a few times. Like, the whole group just went in front, and I went to these screens wherein you have these Holocaust survivors, or the, you know, the sons or daughters of the Holocaust survivor talking about the story of their parents, and you can listen to them. And instead of going and looking around the artifacts, I was listening to the stories, and I just sat there. And, you know, I had, you know, some of my Israeli friends, like Halal, she used to come up to me and she's like, you know, are you okay? Are you doing okay? I'm just listening to how, you know, specifically mothers, you know, all they wanted is just to for them and their children to live their lives. And listening to their stories really did get to me. And I did not know what to do. I was just like, why, you know, why did they have to go through this? What did they do? And that's the question that always goes, you know, in the back of my mind.
And MTS, you had an opportunity to speak directly and to hear directly from survivors. I think two in your case. One, you went to their home to hear more. Can you tell me about that experience and perhaps what you learned from that?
Well, like Yusuf mentioned, it was absolutely heartbreaking to hear the stories firsthand. You tend to read about it or see things, but it's not the same as actually hearing it from the actual victim. It was painful to hear, and I can't believe that they actually had to go through that, all because of their ethnicity and because of who they are. I don't believe anyone should live the way that they did. Honestly, words can't even explain what I felt. I literally broke down in tears. I could not hold myself together. I tried so hard, but I couldn't. The stories are similar. And you can see even now with one of the Holocaust survivors that I spoke to, they still have nightmares till now about it, which it breaks my heart, completely breaks my heart listening to their stories.
And do you think there needs to be more done? And do you think the Abraham Accords will perhaps provide that opportunity for more to be done when it comes to Holocaust education in the Arab world?
I definitely think people need to be educated about it. Even me growing up in the West, we weren't told much about it, not the detail that we were told when we visited the museum. I do feel that people need to be educated and made aware of it, because we don't want this to happen again. We don't want a repeat of history. And now with the Abrahamic Accords, this is a perfect opportunity to actually, I don't know, embed it into some education system so people are aware and students are aware of the past and what has happened.
So I would say, yeah, I'm talking about UAE. Yeah, we received, I would say, a huge part of history education here. Like, we know about World War One, World War Two, and what actually happened and what did, I would say, like, the Nazis done and all. But actually being there and Yad Vashem, it was a whole different experience. Like, they tell you in details what actually happened. Most of the people would think that this was a one-time event. It wasn't. It was not just people were not just dragged all of them at once into the gas chambers. Those people suffered for years. It was a process. Those gas chambers were actually designed. The suffering that all of those people had, and one of the things that was, I would say, overwhelming for me or touching for me, it was that they were never told they were actually going there. So they see you, I mean, they show you at the Yad Vashem that before the end of the museum, people are actually smiling and happy, mothers and babies, and all of them, they don't know where are they going. And this is what actually touched me, I would say, the most. I would say, what gave me like a little bit of relief, I would say, that one of the officers that actually done all of that, he was actually caught later on after the establishment of the State of Israel, and he was actually executed. So that gave me, I wouldn't say a relief, but I would say a little bit of justice. And they asked me to sign the guest book there. And there, Justin, you asked me. So I wrote a sentence in Arabic, and then also I wrote a sentence in English. So, and you asked me, what did you write in Arabic? I write to start with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's what King Solomon, Prophet Solomon, Sulaiman alayhi salam, he would have started his letters. And then I wrote two words. I wrote never again. So this event or this strategy would never happen again. Never ever. That was my experience at the Yad Vashem, I would say.
I think all of you have made the same point, which is that, first of all, Israelis and the country was so much more friendly and welcoming to you than perhaps you would ever have imagined. You've said it talks about the diversity of the country. So what's causing these misconceptions within the Gulf, within the Arab world? Is it coming from leadership? Is it coming from the media? Yusuf, do you want to start on that one?
See, the number one thing is that you have a lot of false media, a lot of media which is being spread, you know, rapidly. Like even our trip, even my pictures is on social media all over, talking about how I went to treat soldiers and physiotherapy, etc. And they're like, you need to spread this to let people know that, you know, people are going there to treat soldiers. And I was like, well, what is this? What is he talking about? And people are spreading it, and people are making it a big deal, believing what this guy said. So you have a lot of false media just spreading like wildfire, and people are believing it. And that's the main issue. Number two is that you do not have, you know, Israeli, until now, we do not have Israeli media in Bahrain to show Israel's point of view. Whenever I go to see someone, what is he watching? It's probably Al Jazeera or something similar to that, because this is one of the only, you know, media channels which talks about the issue, although being one-sided. So these are the two points that needs to be addressed. You know, more media channels need to start, hopefully in Bahrain as well. And I saw that there is progress in Dubai going on right now with the new channel opening up.
And MTS, what would you say about that? Why does it require you and Yusuf and Saud and the rest of the group and so many others to visit the country before they see the reality?
Because we are the new generation. We want peace. We want unity. We want to be one again. We want the Middle East to just be one. I agree with Yusuf. The media doesn't show the true stories, the amount of fake news that we see out there. I mean, if I listened to the media before I went out to Israel, I probably wouldn't have gone. If I was to be honest, I would have stayed at home. I think we need some kind of filtering or someone to filter. We're not going to stop negativity because it will always exist. But I do feel that our stories and us going out there and showing the positive side of things and showing things firsthand can eliminate all this negativity or minimize it. And at the same time, we need someone to filter out all the negativity and filter out all the fake news, because at the minute, I don't think it's done. I don't think there's something or someone managing all this fake news. That's how I'd say filter out the stuff, spread, do more visits. People should come out to Israel and see firsthand, meet the people, hang out with the people, visit the places, see the diversity, see the culture. You will feel at home. Honestly, the news does not even show. It shows nothing of what we experience, nothing. It's always focusing on the negatives. And a lot of the news has been circulated from, I don't know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and it's coming up again with new headlines. And people that are gullible will actually fall for it and actually believe it. So you've got to be careful with what you read and what you see. I'd say just go out there, experience it firsthand and see for yourself, like we've done.
And so many, many people might be listening to this podcast and thinking these young people sound incredible. They're open-minded. They wanted to see for themselves what was going on. So they they made this trip, but to what extent is this representative of wider society? You know, is it just a small minority who are willing to be so open-minded, so willing to see both sides, or, you know, is it a large number of people and a growing number of people as a result of the Abraham Accords? What's your view on that?
Okay, so first of all, our leaders were visionaries. They were the pioneers, the supporters, and the facilitators of the Abrahamic Accords and for the peace treaty. And whatever our leaders say, we're going to follow them 100% because we believe in their vision. And going there actually showed me, I would say, a wider perspective on their vision. So when I talk about, I'm going to talk about UAE here, we are definitely supporting our leaders' vision for peace. And I wouldn't say it's a minority, it's the general idea. I mean, it's the general idea, it's what the society see. And to actually experience that, I've met in the, like at the airport, like going back and coming from Israel, I've met some of the tourists and all of their experience was extremely positive. Some of them even said they felt much safer in Dubai more than Europe. And they felt that they were actually more welcomed in Dubai than Europe. So definitely the general idea is that we support our leaders' vision and we support peace and definitely the Abrahamic Accords.
And Yusuf, what do you hope now to do to further the Abraham Accords and to bring them to life, you know, as a young person?
So first, I have to say that, you know, the Abraham Accord, or to talk about, you know, Jewish people, Muslims and, you know, Christians being together, Bahrain has always showed that, you know, for many years, we've had a synagogue, we have a mosque and a church in a very close, you know, area next to each other in Bahrain, in Manama. And, you know, this just shows how, you know, we've always been tolerant to different religion. We've always lived together in coexistence. And, you know, we've never had this idea of anti-Semitism. This has never existed in Bahrain because we have a Jewish community and we have them in different places. We have them in the Shura Council, which basically is like, it represents people and they're like a form of parliament, I would say. And you've got a chair there. You had, you know, our former ambassador to the UN, Huda Nuno, as well, who's a Jewish, she was the Jewish ambassador, and she's Bahraini. So it's out there. We have a Jewish community in Bahrain. And I think that for me, my goal is to try to go and work on different tourism projects with both Bahrain and Israel to add more interest in people's mind to visit each other's countries, because I got to see both our countries, how we are very similar and we still keep our traditions intact. And I think that there is a great opportunity for tourism in both countries. And I think that Dubai and Israel is, you know, already growing. You have a lot of people from Israel coming into Dubai, but for Bahrain, it has yet to happen because we do not have direct flights. It will start in a couple of months or maybe in a month, hopefully. And also visas will be easily obtainable. So once that happens, I have no doubt in my mind that, you know, tourism will start heavily, you know, and hopefully I can help out in doing that, you know, very soon.
For me, I would like to see more education on both parts, like similar to what Israel is as an organization is doing, where they take in young individuals on visits and educating them about the diversity, the culture. Also, I'm hoping to work on projects with the youth to try and bring the youth together on projects, whether it's sport or, I don't know, programming, tournaments, different activities, just to make both Israelis and Arabs build bridges and start to work together and make them see it firsthand that actually we're very similar, we're not different. We both have similar interests. And I think it's very important to educate the youth because they're our next leaders. And if you tackle that properly, you will see more acceptance, more diversity, more tolerance.
Yeah, so can I ask you, it's a perhaps a thornier question, but obviously, as you say, the leadership of the UAE, of Bahrain, of Sudan, of Israel, and so on have taken the lead on this and made it happen. But people often talk about this being, you know, much more about people-to-people contacts than previous agreements Israel has established with Jordan and with Egypt, for example. But if at some point, because of something that happens in the region around the Palestinian issue or whatever, that there's a cooling of relations, let's say a cooling rather than a cutting off of relations between the governments. What do you think would happen at the people-to-people level? Would you, for example, feel comfortable with continuing personal relationships with Israelis that you've made friends with?
I understand your question, Justin. On that, I can comment. And I would say that we will be supporting our leader's decision, no matter what was it. So if our leader's vision or our leader decision was to cut off, we're going to stay with them. And if our leader's, I would say, perspective or view or vision to continue, we're going to stay with them. We are behind our leaders and we support them 100%.
And I just finally, for perhaps each of you, there were a few visits where I felt that I think Yusuf and Saud, you were talking to the women leading a new startup hub, which is bringing together female tech leaders so that they can continue their visionary work whilst not necessarily in an environment where they might feel uncomfortable religiously if there are men involved and so on. And I think it was, I'm not sure if it was Yusuf or Saud, you were talking about how that could perhaps be exported to your own countries. Talk to me about that.
It was actually an amazing experience. So we were at Modin Elite High-Tech, and high-tech company or high-tech hub, I would say. And their system is really impressive because as Muslims and Jewish, I would say, we have some rules of separation between men and women. And I didn't see that, I would say, in most of the Arab countries, but the model that they represented there, the way that how is their HR is cooperative with them, how is their HR department is so aware of their, I would say, religious views, and how do they try to compensate between the efficiency and the actual work. And from my own perspective, I see that this model can be actually imported, and it can, solve some of the, some minor problems or issues. So, yeah.
And Yusuf, was there anything that you saw where you felt that Bahrain could learn from the Israel model or the other way around?
So looking at how, you know, different companies have come and proposed offers to them, and, you know, they just want them to work and they work from distance, it's just really nice. And I think that such a technological hub would not be a faraway concept from what we would implement in Bahrain. And I feel like if the CEO herself, or her team would have come to Bahrain and talked to the ministries here and told them about their idea, I think we would see one of their offices in Bahrain, you know, in the next month, I would say, because it's such a great idea. You know, do not really want to I think that this point that you said, if, you know, our leaders do say that we will stop, you know, ties with Israel, I think that is, for me personally, I think that this is out of the question already. We have built ties, and I think that this ties will stay for maybe for the rest of my lifetime, as far as I know, because I will make sure to work hard. And as, you know, as a lot of people from the Gulf and the Abraham Accord, we will make sure to work as hard as possible to, you know, keep this going and, you know, support our government and always be there. But I know that such breaking of ties will not.
MTS, if we can conclude with you, I mean, you mentioned towards the beginning about your own family and about the Jewish roots that you have and in your family tree. I know that you did a DNA test at one point, which showed you had, 30% or 31% of Jewish DNA, and the same with a couple of your siblings. Can you tell us just very briefly how you discovered that, and also what you maybe plan to do with that going forward?
Well, I've been in touch with some Yemenite Jewish, the community, spoken to them, actually spent a couple of days with them, spoke to family, extended family in Yemen, and they've confirmed information. I'm still on a journey and I'm still exploring. Maybe in a few months' time, I'll have another story for you, who knows? But I did want to mention one thing about my visit and what inspired me. Mm-hmm. And this has got nothing to do with like my Yemenite Jewish roots. It's actually to do with the youth, because we visited Shelba Center. For those of you that don't know what it is, it's like students of determination, ones that are unable to do what the rest of us can do on a daily basis. I was really, really, really inspired by the way they don't let their disabilities get in the way of them living their life to the full. They used music to express themselves. So they've got a band, and honestly, they're amazing. And for me, that inspired me so much to see students use music to express themselves. Maybe the UAE can adopt a similar approach over here. And definitely, I would love to see that kind of thing happen over this side of the world.
I would like to add just one note on that, that here in the UAE, we have no people of disability. We only have people of determination.
And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening to the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to thank our guests, MTS Radman, Saud Saga, and Yusuf Mohammed. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment, then we'd love to hear from you on editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Justin Cohen, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.